You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Rommel. Let's get into part two of our mailbag. If you missed part one, go back and listen to that, or just listen to this one first, and then I guess there's no specific order we put these in, so it doesn't matter. How you doing, David?
I'm doing pretty good. Yeah, and you're right. There is no order. We want everybody to listen to them, re-listen to them if possible. Go back and get all of our old takes, break them down, analyze them
backwards.
As always.
Yeah, that's
always good. And remember, as always, we appreciate all of our listeners and everybody who writes into us. And there's so many different ways of contacting us. And you all do such a great job. We really are appreciative.
Absolutely. And this first question is a good one. Comes from Sam with the, in quotations, possible news that the Knicks could trade Kristaps Porzingis. What's the best trade offer the Heat could make? I would literally be okay with trading anyone. However, I don't think we could realistically make an offer that even the Knicks would accept. Second part of the question. Also, trading for LaMarcus Aldridge is kind of depressing, but is that something the Heat might look into? I remember he took a meeting with Pat Riley knowing we didn't even have the cap space to sign him. So two-part question from Sam. Let's start with the Kristaps stuff. And just a preface, this rumor starts... It's not a rumor that the Knicks are shopping Kristaps Porzingis. It's just that Kristaps Porzingis skipped his exit meeting with Phil Jackson, is reportedly frustrated with the direction of the team and the way that the team is basically handling everything. And he went back home and he's like boxing and stuff this offseason. It's just all...
There was also a cryptic tweet about the Clippers that apparently was because someone allegedly hacked into his Twitter account and tweeted something about the...
It's amazing how Clippers. Many people are hacking basketball players' Twitter accounts. It's some conspiracy.
It's a big business, I guess. I had no idea that people could devote so much of their time just to tweet out inappropriate comments from somebody's
Twitter
account.
Was it Los Angeles happy face or Clippers happy face emoji? Wasn't that...
Something like that.
It was so stupid.
Anyway. I can't remember. Exact emoji that
but
was
I love the hypothetical, though. Like, let's just eliminate whether or not the Knicks are doing it or not, because who knows? It's the Knicks. What's the best package that the Heat could offer? What do you think?
Well, we'd have to take a considerable amount of salary in return. I imagine they'd probably want to include Joakim Noah in a deal like that. And I can't see a world where Miami's willing to take on Noah's salary. As competitive as he is, and he's a guy who, if healthy, would have fit perfectly with Miami's culture. As Hollywood as hell as it might be in Noah's opinion, I think he would have fit perfectly here a few years ago with the way he played the ball and his passing ability, et cetera. So it would have been a really nice fit had this been in 2012. Unfortunately, it's 5 years later, and Noah is no longer the player he once was, so we'll have to take on that considerable salary, which would ruin...
$15 million plus a year. Yeah.
I mean, it's just insane. We would ruin everything for Miami. We'd probably have to ship Whiteside and a first-round pick. And even then, I'm pretty sure that Knicks fans would feel absolutely outraged at trading away Porzingis. I mean, the nickname Porzingod, as nice as it might seem or whatever hokey as it might be in some people's opinions, he is beloved there. We talked to Derek Jubin weeks ago. I can't remember exactly when it was. Porzingis he's virtually untouchable. I can't imagine a scenario or even if he would take a dump on Phil Jackson's desk and light it on fire, I don't see any reason why they would trade him.
So, okay. I agree with you, but I do love hypotheticals, so I'm going to put a trade package together.
Let's do it.
So I agree. It takes Whiteside and the 14th pick minimum. Well, it probably takes more than that. It's either Dragic or Whiteside, right? One of those guys. Justice Winslow.
Yeah.
Tyler Johnson or Josh Richardson, one of the two, and the 14th pick. That's the minimum. I think anything less than that, the Knicks could get better offers for Porzingis.
And that trade doesn't work, right? I mean, it can't theoretically work just because
Right. You would have to lump Joakim Noah in, which is an insane amount to pay. I mean, I'm looking at his contract now. He will be making $17.7 million next season. $18.5 million the season after, and $19.3 million after that.
That's a hell of a lot of money.
But then you compare that to Porzingis, right? who is potentially a franchise-changing player, right? If Miami is looking for that guy, that next guy who can change the direction of this franchise and make them competitive in a couple of years, Kristaps Porzingis is as good as a bet as anybody, almost. He doesn't make a whole lot of money. He's making $4.5 million next year, $5.6 million the year after, $7.5 million the year after, and then he's a restricted free agent where Miami, or in this case the Knicks, but Miami would potentially have his rights. So you're basically getting him at a rookie scale deal until the year 2020, which is when Joakim Noah becomes an unrestricted free agent. Take the individual salaries out of it. Would you pay, I don't know, $25 million, $26 million in the year 2019, for the 2019-2020 season? Would you take that combined for Joakim Noah and Kristaps Porzingis, not knowing what their individual salaries were?
Sure, I guess that's one way of putting it.
It's one way, I mean, if you're getting Porzingis at a really undermarket contract, you kind of make up the difference with that horrible Joakim Noah deal. And it is really bad. But there is always, I guess, the possibility that Joakim Noah becomes a decent reserve center.
Backup center. Yeah. I mean, look. Okay, so let's look at it from a realistic perspective then. You've traded away, let's say, Whiteside, Winslow, and TJ, plus the 14th pick. So he was never part of the equation. Whomever they might have drafted at 14th, that's not something to consider. So you've taken a hit as far as your overall depth is concerned. But I guess you've also alleviated some cap concerns, particularly Tyler Johnson in 2 years from now.
Right.
You've lost Winslow's potential, which we spent a part of last podcast talking about considerably. But also Whiteside's limited skill set and contract comes off the books. And all of a sudden you have a much more versatile player like Porzingis. And again, theoretically, if healthy, a quality backup in Noah. So you don't have to worry about re-signing Willie Reed because all of a sudden you've got Noah who comes in off the bench, provides 10 earnest minutes of defense and maybe a couple flashy passes and some horrific tornado-looking passes. They're shots at the rim, I guess. You've got Porzingis.
Yep.
You start him at center, right?
Yep. So I think
something that New York hasn't been willing to do.
And maybe you're hoping to re-sign James Johnson and Deion Waiters. So now you have a drive and kick team with a stretch five who can also protect the rim. That's transformative. You know, it's transformative in a way that Whiteside isn't. And you've got Dragic. Let's say you re-sign Waiters and James Johnson. So you've got Dragic and Waiters in the backcourt. Fill in a small forward somehow. You have James Johnson at power forward and Porzingis at center. That's dangerous. I don't know what that team's ceiling is. But again, if you're looking for an all-star player, Porzingis is as good as a bet as anybody to be a franchise-changing player. So I don't think it happens. I don't think the Knicks are trading Porzingis anytime soon, and I don't even think that would be enough to get him. But that would be, I think, the minimum trade package it would take for Miami to do something like that, right?
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering whether or not the team's considerably worse. Basically, in effect, losing Tyler Johnson and Justice Winslow, so quality backups, but replacing, in effect, Whiteside with Porzingis. And I know a lot of fans would probably say, absolutely, that makes you better. But because of Whiteside's impact defensively, how everything is routed directly to him to protect the rim, it would have to change. I trust that Spo would be able to do with Porzingis what he did with Bosch at center, right?
I think that would be the plan. Yeah, absolutely. And like, if you're a team that has Dragic, Waiters, James Johnson, and Porzingis, is that enough to convince Paul George to sign next summer at small forward and play the LeBron James position in that? If you're trying to remake the big three, you have Waiters in the Wade spot, Paul George in the LeBron spot, and Porzingis in the Bosch spot, plus Dragic being an almost as good Mario Chalmers.
Yeah. I heard what you said, and it didn't filter through until I realized. But yes, you're right. Absolutely. Dragic will always be a poor man's Chalmers.
All right, so how about for trading for LaMarcus Aldridge? That comes up because the Spurs lose in the Western Conference Finals. There's questions about Aldridge's fit in San Antonio. And if they want to make a move for Chris Paul, San Antonio, the best way to do that would be to trade LaMarcus Aldridge for basically pennies on the dollar and that way you can bring in Chris Paul. And that's a real rumor that's being floated around by, like, real media people. So it's an interesting thing to consider. I actually wrote last week for FanRag a few locations for LaMarcus Aldridge. I didn't include Miami.
Oh.
But what's your take on LaMarcus Aldridge? Do you think he would fit in Miami? Do you think Pat Riley's even interested? We talked about the meeting that he took with Aldridge a few seasons ago. Would he even be interested at this point?
What's his salary, like $20 million a year?
Yeah, ish, something like that. I feel like Riley thinks he dodged a bullet there.
Yeah, I think if you're paying, you know, Whiteside a little bit more than that per year, and given Whiteside's ability on defense, I don't know. I mean, I think obviously Aldridge's game is vastly different than Whiteside's, but I think you probably feel more comfortable paying Whiteside what you do rather than paying Aldridge what you'd have to if you were able to acquire.
So I agree with that. I don't think he's a good fit. He doesn't space the floor enough to be a good fit next to Whiteside. He kind of just hovers in that DeMar DeRozan mid-range area. He really is like the power forward, the big man version of DeMar DeRozan. He is great in the mid-range, but just as soon as he hits that three-point line, his shot just goes crazy. Like, there's no talent.
And he doesn't draw free throws nearly as many as DeMar DeRozan does, so his value is greatly reduced.
His defense is actually better than people give him credit for. His rim protection numbers are comparable to Rudy Gobert, even though he protects the rim about half the time that Rudy Gobert does, so it's a smaller sample size. But good stats, nonetheless. And he's definitely improved in San Antonio. He's not a great rebounder, especially on the offensive end, as we saw in the Western Conference Finals. So I don't love him as a player in the modern NBA, but if San Antonio was trying to just ship him off or whatever because they had a deal in place that they knew they can get Chris Paul, and they're like, we got to trade Aldridge for whatever we can get for him, would you trade the 14th pick straight up for LaMarcus Aldridge?
No.
Wow, really? And you're usually veteran over rookie every day.
Yeah, I think it's just because of the diminished impact in today's league. I think I just don't see how he'd fit in with that. I mean, if you're going to have him and Weiss on the same team, that's not going to work. Either you move Whiteside and then see if maybe you can acquire a guy like Aldridge, not necessarily to play center, but just to have another option there offensively, and then that might work. But if you're going to have him and Whiteside on there, all of a sudden – your spacing's killed. I just don't see how it'll work. You're going to clog the middle up. And look, they ran the team with two big men there. Pau Gasol was working from the perimeter at times, but they were actually more effective with Dwayne Dedman there. I don't know. Dedman's a free agent. Did you figure out a way of maybe trading Whiteside for Aldridge and Dedman?
Hmm.
That work?
Yeah. I don't know.
Again, you'd have to change.
Whiteside doesn't seem to me like a player that could survive in the Greg Popovich room. I think they talk way too much high politics for Whiteside to keep up there.
Yeah, when Pop offers him a glass of a fine Bordeaux and he's like, no, I'd prefer a slushy or something like that. That's
you got a Four Loko.
Right. Yeah. Four Loko, oh God. He has a stash. He saw the writing on the wall when they were gonna be banned from every Quickie Mart across the country, and he bought a lifetime supply just in case.
I'm sure he did. There's stashed underneath the fish tank. All right, so yeah, you and I know on Aldridge. It is a depressing thought. You're right, Sam. All right, next question. This comes from Jordan Malley. There has been more talk about Blake Griffin in Miami recently. I have sort of mixed feelings about him, mostly due to his health. How would you feel, though, about bringing him into Miami, and what would that mean for Deion, James Johnson, Wayne Ellington, Willie Reed, etc.? Also, what do you think Pat Riley thinks of Griffin? What do you think?
Wow. I'm going to touch that second question first about what Pat Riley might think of Griffin, because that's kind of hard to predict, right?
But it's also the crux of everything, right?
Yeah. I would think that Riley sees Blake Griffin as a player yet to reach his potential, that he's still young enough but also versatile enough to take that next leap, that because of the way the system was run in L.A. with – Chris Paul changing and forcing so much of the action to go through him, I think Griffin wasn't utilized to his maximum ability. And I think there's another level for him to reach. And I could see Riley becoming enamored with that. Plus, nothing puts as many butts in the seats as a guy who has a very popular face. He's on commercials. He's all over the place. I think there's certainly an attractive draw there for a guy like Riley who wants to build a team with an obvious superstar compared to last year's team that didn't have that superstar. So I would think he would probably want him, but I would think and assume that Riley would probably try to convince him, if he's even interested in him, to come here at a reasonable price and say, look, in today's league, I know I'm asking you a lot, but you make so much money on the side through your various enterprises, take less here, be the superstar that this team needs, and you will take your game to another level. Obviously, Spoelstra has proven that he can coach big-name players, big-time egos, et cetera, and I could see Riley making a pitch like that and convincing him to take less money.
Yeah.
Having said that, we spent a considerable amount of time in a previous podcast, I want to say back in April, maybe even late April. And I think we both completely shot down the idea of Blake coming to Miami. For all of his skill set and for everything that he does, his ability to space the floor, he can drive, he can do a lot of different things. He can handle the ball very well. The injuries are a big time concern. And I just don't know that he's ready to assume that leadership mantle. Plus, you know, one of the things that we talked about was that Dragic had assumed that mantle this past season, and all of a sudden you want to take that from him. What does that mean as far as Dion and James Johnson and other guys like that? Well, you'd have to probably part with ways with at least one of them, if not all of them, and that changes things. So all of a sudden you've got a team with Goran, Whiteside, and Blake Griffin as your kind of shady big three, and you have to kind of fill all those other roster spots as could be. Maybe Josh Richardson might fit in there. Justice Winslow would probably kind of have to come off the bench. He might be forced into a starting position. You know, again, you like three-point shooting. Blake isn't necessarily – he's a capable three-point shooter, but I wouldn't feel comfortable relying on that as a reliable weapon.
I mean, I agree with everything that you're saying. And to reference back to that same podcast we were talking about we did in April, we basically tore apart the whole Blake Griffin idea. Then we got this question in the mailbag, and it really got me thinking
– uh-oh.
Oh, shit, what if this actually happens? Like, how do we spin it positive? But I think you're also right. I think Pat Riley he might talk himself into Blake Griffin. If Gordon Hayward is off the table, right, he signs back with Utah or even worse, goes to Boston, right? Let's say Hayward goes to Boston, and Griffin's out there, right? The Clippers re-sign Chris Paul to that five-year super veteran max deal. And they say, look, we're gonna build around the Chris Paul, DeAndre Jordan pick and roll. We're going to use Blake Griffin's cap space to finally fill out the depth on this roster. And Griffin's gone. Miami is comparable enough to L.A. that it makes sense for him, right? If he's going to go anywhere else other than L.A., it does make sense. Miami does. If that's the card that Riley is dealt, I could see him talking himself into Blake Griffin. Like, sure, just sure. Like we saw the Knicks talk themselves into Amari Stoudemire when they couldn't get Dwayne Wade and LeBron James. I could definitely see that happening. And if that's the case, you're right. You're probably losing at least one of that group of Deion, James Johnson, Ellington, or Willie Reed. You might be able to convince Blake Griffin to sign as a free agent, opt out when he gets bird rights in Miami, give him a player option for that season, but sign him for less money. So you're giving him an early player option where he can opt out and make a lot more money, and because you have the bird rights, you can give him whatever max and it doesn't matter. Right. And if that's the case, maybe you are able to keep both Deion and James Johnson, even though I don't really know how you play James Johnson on a team that has Whiteside and Blake Griffin. But maybe you're able to bring back Waiters. Look, I think if you do... You're right. What kind of big three is that? Blake Griffin, Hassan Whiteside, and Goran Dragic. That's kind of like a knockoff version of the big three in L.A., right?
Yeah.
It's and that's not bad, right? That L.A., that big three of L.A., but they won 50-plus games every season. Every season.
But, right.
If that's the goal, that roster could do it, especially if it has more depth than those LA rosters, which I think it would, even if you did lose all those free agents that we talked about. There's the other option, though. If you get Blake Griffin, do you trade Whiteside or even Goran Dragic? Because you're right. Where does Goran Dragic fit in? I think Goran Dragic and Blake Griffin could play in a fast-paced offense. But do you have to trade one of them and kind of reshape the roster around Blake Griffin? I think you might. I'm not sure, though.
I'm thinking about this now, and the fact that you drew the comparison to the Clippers makes it feel like a virtual guarantee it's going to happen.
Really?
Like, I just got a bleak vision of it actually happening, and making that comparison to Whiteside as a DeAndre Jordan comp, and Dragic kind of assuming the same role that Chris Paul did with better perimeter shooting. I mean, unbelievable. And you're right. And you can convince them that we'll have more depth, that we have Justice Winslow, that we have Josh Richardson, we have all these young players, and perhaps even Deion Waiters.
And that look, yeah, it didn't work for the Clippers in a sense that everybody knew that Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan were best separate, right? Because they're both non-floor spacers. But they still, just because of the sheer talent and offense, just the offensive talent of those two, plus Chris Paul, they still won 50-plus games.
They had a lot of bad luck, too, as far as injuries are concerned.
Is it the worst thing in the world? You know, you're losing what the Heat accomplished last season, which is that beautiful pace, you know, spacing and driving kick game that was really fun. But you get Blake Griffin, who's not, like, if you can convince him to sign for something less than $30 million a year, you can, that's a good market value, I think, is all I'm trying to say. And maybe it doesn't look as pretty and it's not as fun as last year's Heat team was, but even the Heat team 2 years ago won 48 games, and that wasn't pretty either, but they just had enough talent.
I'm torn because I think this goes back like maybe even a year or maybe even to last offseason where there was a J.J. Redick podcast with Blake on there, and he was so intelligent and well-spoken and funny and charming and everything else. And then he goes and gets into that fight with the trainer and mocks fellatio along the sidelines and does all these ridiculous jackass things. And it's like, I don't know whether I like him or hate him, but I just kind of am feeling more towards the latter, and I don't know if I necessarily want him to have anything to do with his team.
I think if it does happen, we'll both find a way to talk ourselves into liking it.
God damn it.
All right, next question. This comes from Jacques Leandre. I'm a huge fan of Luke Kennard and his ability to shoot the ball. I know his measurements at the combine weren't great, but the kid knows how to score the basketball. He's also a very underrated passer. Plus, Miami loves Duke players. Thoughts?
Does Miami really like Duke players? I mean, Battier.
Battier, Winslow. Who else?
Luol Deng.
Luol Deng.
Is that it?
Who's that white guy that we have? Like,
Shevlik Randolph?
No, during like the Shaq era, I feel like. It's a big
He's from Utah. Guy. He's from Utah. Doliak, Michael Doliak.
Oh, yeah, he was from Utah.
Yeah, he was a Ute.
Oh, he was a Ute, not a Duke? Okay.
Yeah. Wow, that's racist, Wes. I can't believe that you would go there. Not all white guys of questionable haircuts goes to Duke, you know?
But Luke Kennard did.
Yeah.
White guys Luke Kennard
just happened to be one of those.
Kennard's already... Luke Kennard's already got the Butler era Gordon Hayward haircut. You know, in like 3 or 4 years, he's gonna go like with the nice slick back and everything. Everybody's like, why do you have that mop top entering the NBA? It's already a foregone conclusion. Anyway, I like Kennard. I think he can shoot the ball really well. He can shoot the ball off the dribble, which is something that really more and more as we focus on 3-point shooting in the NBA. Defenses are defending 3-point shooting a lot more, obviously, right? If we saw anything in Miami, off the ball shooting is getting a lot more important. And he could shoot threes off the dribble. Did I say off the ball shooting? I meant off the dribble shooting earlier. Yeah. Off the dribble shooting is getting really important. Kennard could do that. He can pass a little bit. Defense remains an issue, but he works hard enough. And something I know you like, I'm sure, David, he got better and better at Duke. Which shows, okay, maybe you'll put the work ethic into getting average at least on defense, right? Just don't be a turnstile on defense. That's good enough if you're an elite 3-point shooter, which Kennard could be. He might. He's probably one of the best 3 shooters in this draft. Do you have an opinion on him?
Not particularly. I mean, I guess I've fallen into a predictable pattern of kind of disliking the player du jour over at Duke. You know, they seem to thrive while they're there and then necessarily pan out at that next level. I'm not sure. I haven't seen enough of Kenner to know if he's capable of making that leap. He seems to be more, based on scouting reports and even on what you're saying, he seems more likely to fit into that later part of the first round, right? I think going for him at 14 is probably much too high. Now, in our previous podcast, we did talk about the possibility of trading down, maybe packaging a player or packaging a number of picks for the team, like, say, Portland, and maybe acquiring a player later in the first round. If that's the case, then maybe acquiring like Kennard makes more sense. Would you take him at 14? Doesn't that seem like an unusually high value for him?
I think if you're the right team, it makes sense. But Miami doesn't need
that's Kennard. Another point.
If Kennard was 6'8", then I think you take him at 14. You play him at small forward. I don't care if he's slow on defense and all this stuff. I mean, he could just space the floor, period, end of story. He's 6'4", 6'5", shorter arms. So there's questions about his defensive ability and his ceiling. But, like, J.J. Redick did the same thing. Would you take J.J. Redick at 14? Like, knowing that he panned out the way he did, you're getting a solid three-point shooter for 10 years? I would. But for Miami, you've got Dragic, you've got Waiters, you've got Tyler Johnson, you've got Josh Richardson. I usually reject the hypothesis that you already have so many guards, so you can't take a guard. I think you can take the guard if it's the right guard. If Donovan Mitchell is there at 14, I'm all in favor of taking him. I don't care that it complicates things. It's worth it for a really good player. But Kennard is a guy who his ceiling is pretty clear, and he's only going to be as good as you play him for. You know what I mean? Like, he's not going to get a whole lot better on the bench is what I'm saying. Like, he's not a guy that's 2 years away. He could play right now, which is a very valuable thing, but he's not going to get, I don't think, a whole lot better. So you need to play him right away. I don't think Miami can, unless, of course, they're looking to get out of that Tyler Johnson contract, and then Kennard could come in and play that combo guard. He could play, I think he can run an offense or learn to run an offense, a second unit offense, that is. He could come in and shoot right away and score right away. Or he could be insurance in case Deion Waiters leaves. I just think there's more value at 14 than that player, though.
He seems like a player who's probably going to want to spend a lot of time in the D League. And like what you're saying, he's probably a guy who needs to play a lot in order to take it to that next level. And unfortunately, the only teams that would where he would be able to play a lot is on those teams in the earlier part of the draft. And he's not a top 10 pick. Yeah. You know, if you draft him and you put him in a team like, I don't know, say Orlando or something along those lines, you know, a top 10 team as far as their draft pick is concerned, then he'll get a considerable amount of playing time. He'll start getting better, et cetera. But because he's likely to slip to the mid to later part of the first round, he's not going to get as much playing time. He's probably going to get stashed in the D-League, wind up getting better and better there. And if he's able to make that leap, you know, he's going to have to put in the work for it. And, I mean, he's shown the ability to do so, like you pointed out. So there's potential for him, but it's probably not going to be reached this year, probably not even next year. Maybe in year three, you'll start to see him take that next level where you can consider him a potential starting shooting guard.
I feel like Charlotte's going to take him at 12. They always reach for guys, it seems like. I feel like Charlotte's just going to take him at 12.
At 12?
Yeah, yeah.
Do they need him again? I mean, Mike
Gilchrist plays backup combo guard. Charlotte needs guard help really bad. I mean, they've got Kemba Walker. They've got Kid Gilchrist and Nick Batum on the wings, and they've got Jeremy Lamb, who's not very good. But they've got no depth. I could see them bringing in Kennard as their sixth man and playing a little combo guard like the Tyler Johnson spot, but for them, I could see them reaching. I think they just tend to reach. Charlotte gets weird in the draft. I could see them just reaching for Kennard. I could see that.
It's Michael Jordan. He likes the North Carolina guys, right?
Yep. Where are we now? Okay. Last question. With the Celtics likely adding Markelle Fultz and possibly one or two more big names in free agency, the Wizards being on the upswing, the Cavs having LeBron James, what's the realistic path for Miami to get back into contention for the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals, and how long do we expect it to take? That question comes from Brian Young. This is the question that's really at the center of every mailbag question we ever get, right? Is, all right, what can the Heat do now? How does that help in the future to get back in the title contention? You and I have talked about this specifically even a whole lot. But I think it's so hard to figure out what that road is. Because if everybody knew the road, everybody would be taking that road, right? If there was a clear road, every team would be competing for the finals. It's just so hard, and it comes down to luck so much. I really just think, the more and more I've thought about this, and I've given a lot of thought into this, a lot, just keep doing what they're doing. I just think Miami, just keep doing what you're doing. Keep signing guys like Deion Waiters and James Johnson. Draft the best player available with whatever pick you have, if you even have a pick, and just hope to get lucky. I think you look at teams like the Cavaliers, the only reason they're in the finals is because LeBron James was born in Ohio, right? That's the only reason. Other than that, they were completely incompetent as a franchise. The only reason that they're in the NBA finals is because LeBron James was born in Akron. That's it. The Golden State Warriors, even though they're light years ahead, they did also get lucky, right?
They got extraordinarily lucky.
They got a lot of good breaks. I mean, with Curry's ankles, his first few years, that they were able to convince, they were able to sign him for a below market deal, and then of course, and then he just miraculously like got healthy and stopped having ankle problems. I know he put a lot of work in, not to discredit him, but you know, Draymond Green hitting, like they passed on Draymond Green too. Everybody but the Warriors passed. The Warriors passed on Draymond Green. They took Festus Ezeli. They were willing to give up Draymond Green. He just happened to also be there when they were picking again in the second round. They got lucky a few times, and it does take that. I look at what Houston did. Houston was a contender for the Western Conference. They just kind of stayed in the middle, kept adding guys, kept going through guys, kept getting guys on good values, turning assets into better assets. Eventually, that turned into James Harden. Nobody thought James Harden would be what James Harden is now. But you hit, and maybe, you know, Deion Waiters could be the next James Harden. Who knows? But that's, I think, the path that Miami has to do, that they have to go on, and that's kind of the one that they're already on, right?
Yeah. I'm just trying to see what that stroke of luck could potentially be. Maybe find a guy in the draft who's got superstar potential. I mean, it doesn't seem likely with a 14th pick, but, you know, there are options out there.
Just draft the guy with the smallest amount of film on him as possible, and you go the Giannis route. Just get the guy who's like shady Bigfoot YouTube clips and draft that guy. You never know.
Maybe Winslow takes a leap that not a lot of people expected. The playmaking rounds out, the shooting gets to a manageable level. You know, Josh Richardson continues the growth because he's, you know, incredibly determined and obsessive about his work. Everybody is getting together at the American Airlines Arena already to put in off-season work, even the guys that are unsigned. So there's clearly a devotion there. Maybe he takes another step. I mean, all of a sudden you've got much more depth. Tyler Johnson's continuing to improve.
I mean, look at what Philadelphia did too. I mean, they tanked, right? But the general idea was, let's get as many young guys with high ceilings and potential as possible, and maybe one of them hits and becomes our franchise player. Miami could do the same thing, but not to the tanking level. But they, you know, you bring in Josh Richardson, Hassan Whiteside, Tyler Johnson. You're bringing in these guys. We forget Hassan Whiteside was in the D League. I mean, he was a high ceiling, low risk play, and he ended up becoming a max level player. If you could find another Hassan Whiteside, this team is in the Eastern Conference, is contending for the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, if you could find a player at a position of need that becomes a $20 million a year player, that's a lot of really good players. And you just kind of have to keep adding those kind of guys. Keep bringing in Tyler Johnson and Roddy Magruder and O'Kara White and all these guys and just keep turning through them until you do it. I think the only thing that the Heat can do better is find a way to acquire more draft picks. You have the 14th pick in this summer's draft. You have no picks. Well, your pick is top seven protected next year. If you can maybe trade that 14th pick down and acquire some future picks or whatever, trade some sort of assets, you could buy second. The Heat, they don't have a second round pick until 2022, but they can buy a first round pick every year until 2022, or a second round pick, I should say, until 2022 when they actually have their own pick. Just keep finding guys, keep mining guys out in the G League and doing all that. I think that's like the only way is you have 15 roster spots plus two two-way contracts now, which are brand new for next season. Use those extra two roster spots. Try to find the next Tyler Johnson, the next Hassan Whiteside. If you could find another one of those guys, your roster gets a lot better.
So, kind of wrapped into Brian's question, there is, you know, because LeBron is still playing at the level he is, it makes it much more difficult for anybody to envision themselves as legitimate Eastern Conference challengers. How much longer do you think James has playing at this level, realistically?
6 years.
Really? 6 years? I mean, it's certainly within the realm of possibility, yeah. Right? I just don't know.
He spends like something like $250,000 a year on his body or some crazy number. I made that off.
It's well worth
don't
it,
quote
yeah.
me on that. But it's some insane amount. Like,
no, yeah. I think it ran the millions, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
It was an ESPN article that talked about just between the training and the machines and everything else.
We're 2 years away from him like training in virtual reality. Like every brand new scientific thing, like it's the military and LeBron James that have it. And right. it seems like why not? Like he's playing as good as ever now. Like it's like if Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love get a little bit better on defense, or if Cleveland can kind of shape out that roster where LeBron doesn't have to guard the best player every night, I think he could play until he's 40 years old at this level. Like I don't like why not?
So then
I don't know. So basically, what I'm saying is it's hopeless. None of the players that Miami is going to win their next title with will be are on the roster right now. Is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. So that's the other really part of Brian's deal. Question. I mean, take pride in the fact that Miami's won 3 championships in the last 10 years, and keep looking forward to potential playoff berths. That's about it.
I will say this. If you were tasked with building a championship roster this summer, you have to win a title next year, or you have to make the Eastern Conference Finals next year, and then who knows what can happen in there. There is a world where you could sign Gordon Hayward and get Paul George, right? You trade everything it takes to get Paul George. You sign Gordon Hayward in free agency. Maybe you have a team with Goran Dragic, Gordon Hayward, Paul George, James Johnson, and Hassan Whiteside. If you're able to make that sort of move, you trade Winslow, Tyler Johnson, Josh Richardson, and a first-round pick for Paul George because nobody else wants to trade for Paul George because he's going to Lakers next summer. And then you're able to sign Gordon Hayward away from Boston because it's a better fit for him anyway. I mean, maybe that. Or you could just completely tear it down and tank. Miami's pick is top 7 protected next season. If you tank next year, keep your top 7 pick. And then you've basically got to do like what Brian is talking about with the Celtics. They're getting Fultz, right? Because they got that Brooklyn pick. If you can keep your seventh pick, your top 7 pick, and then get the equivalent of that Brooklyn pick, which would be you'd have to trade for Philadelphia's first-round pick. They also own the 2018 Lakers pick, which is a really valuable pick. Maybe you trade with the Knicks or Phoenix. To tank, you have to trade either Whiteside or Dragic. Do you trade one of them for one of those first-round picks? Philadelphia's first-round pick in 2018, the Lakers pick, the Phoenix pick, or a Knicks pick? And then maybe you get 2 top 7 picks to add to the 14th pick you get this summer. And then you rebuild around that trio. I mean, is that something that you can do? That would be like a high risk, high reward play.
Sure. And then you're not gonna reap the rewards of a draft or of a team that young for another 5 seasons, if at all.
Right, which is maybe when LeBron starts declining.
Right. I've got a quicker step. Sign Kevin Durant this summer. Durant comes, you know, he realizes that Golden State was a fun experience. He's known to be kind of given to whimsical changes of heart, despite the fact that he left Oklahoma City and the fact that he loved Golden State and the 1 year experience he did. He's tired of hearing about how him coming to that team was bad for the NBA. He doesn't want to deal with that. He's got his championship because the Warriors are going to win it this year, obviously. So all of a sudden, his legacy is somewhat secure and that he's a top scorer of all time. And he's got a championship his belt, at least one. He likes the fact that he was able to beat LeBron. But, of course, there's only the matchup with LeBron in the finals should it happen. So why not increase the odds a little bit, change him, and go to the Eastern Conference? He's talked about Eric Spoelstra. I think he likes the system here. I could see it. I could see Durant possibly saying, you know what, I'm just going to be the kind of player to go where my heart takes me from 1 year to the next. And he signs with Miami.
It's like on a one-year deal?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
I love the story of Durant's primary motivation not being loyalty to Oklahoma City, or joining the best possible team for the beauty of basketball, whatever it is in Golden State. I love that or even money. His primary motivation is just to defeat LeBron James at every chance right. he gets.
Because he's tired of being number two.
Yeah,
he's tired of being number two.
I love it. And he's like, I'm gonna do it where LeBron did it. I'm going to Miami, and then I'm gonna upsert LeBron's Cavaliers as a Miami Heat player. I love the storyline. Let's do it.
We already did. We already brought waiters. I mean, KD to Miami. That's the way to do it.
All right. We were using our magic powers for Jared Sullinger, but I guess we'll sacrifice him for Kevin Durant.
His jersey's number is 35. All you have to do is add a zero in the middle, and that gives you 305. That's Miami area code. Come on down, KD. We've got it.
Coincidence? I think not. Absolutely. All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Whether you're listening on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcast, thank you for listening. You can send mailbag questions or get information about advertising on the show by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. To support the show, make sure you download every episode, then follow Locked On Heat on Twitter. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.